Good morning. It's 8:20. You're listening to Morning Edition on KASU. I'm Jonathan Reeves. Joining me on the phone lines right now is U.S. Representative Rick Crawford and his monthly interview. Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate you as always.
You bet. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you as well. This morning, I just want to get your thoughts on the crisis that continues to take place in Syria and the United States' response. How do you think the President Trump and the United States should respond to what's taking place in Syria at this time?
Well, you know, right now, you and your listeners know as much as I do on this. This is something that has just come to light over the last, 24, 36 hours or so in that cycle. So not a whole lot out there that we know beyond what's out there in the open source. But it appears to me that obviously Assad was behind this, and I think with possibly even the support of, certainly the tacit approval of Russia and Iran. And so that was sort of, as I understand it, kind of a stronghold for rebel forces there. And, so obviously he had a reason, a motive to take the action that he did. And, of course, now I'm sure that President Trump has a plan of action. He did the last time this happened. And quite frankly, I'm a little bit surprised that it would have happened again. But I think the action that's taken following this will have to be even more decisive and leave nothing to chance. My suspicion is that they're formulating a plan right now that will make a much stronger statement than the last action.
Yeah, and what do you think something like that, or how do you think the United States should respond to this?
Well, I mean, certainly this is the last one I thought was the appropriate response. It was very targeted. Somewhere in the neighborhood of, I think, 59 cruise missiles on some very specific military targets. And so I think what we're seeing right now in that there's not an immediate response is probably making sure that the targets are vetted and that everything that the president does is done with very clear-eyed and a full assessment of the situation on the ground so that he can, affect a more of a change there. I mean, obviously, it's been almost a year since this happened the last time, and I think this is going to take a little stronger statement. Obviously, Assad got the message last time, but I think he has forgotten that this president is not going to be trifled with.
Let's talk a little bit about the what some people are calling a trade war or that's taking place between the United States and China. You know, China's prepared to issue a host of tariffs, about $40 billion worth of U.S. imports in response to President Trump's tariffs on steel and aluminum. Arkansas agriculture officials are worried. The question is, should they be? Should they be worried about this, how it might affect Arkansas agriculture in the First District?
Well, I think it's a natural and normal response for folks that are agriculture producers, because agriculture producers have very little control over what they do. I mean, it doesn't matter how good a farmer you are, you're still at the mercy of the markets. You are 100% a price taker. And so that is enough to create some trepidation among farmers in Arkansas and throughout the rest of the country. But I would just remind folks a couple of things, and I know that it's a pretty scary time when you see. I mean, there was a little bit of a run on soybeans. I think we've about found the bottom, but some mitigating factors there that I think haven't been talked about. But first thing to remember is the fundamentals haven't changed. There's still 1.4 billion people in China, and we have the capacity to meet the demand in China in a variety of ways, from a quality standpoint, from a capacity standpoint. We can do that, and the Chinese know it. So I think this is a little bit of economic saber-rattling. Nothing has been finalized yet, and so it's caused a little bit of market tumult. But, just keep in mind that the fundamentals haven't changed and that the Chinese are going to have to buy U.S. soybeans and corn. Now, there's a couple of reasons for that. I mean, obviously, their population, but even their livestock production has increased considerably over the last 10 or so years, and so they've got not only the demand on the human consumption side, but now on the livestock consumption side, and that's not changing and won't in the foreseeable future. So they're going to have to rely on the United States, and so I don't think they want to see punish themselves And I think what we're seeing now is just sort of a knee-jerk reaction from the Chinese. Now, on the other hand, they're pretty savvy. They play us every time, and they've done it this time. As you see, the markets, there was a run on soybeans, and I think what they did, in my opinion, if you track the activity in the market, you would probably see that Chinese interests probably shorted the soybean market, and then when they run the market down, of course, then they buy up at that price. And, you know, so I think they're playing this to full effect and to their own advantage. And I think we'll start to see this level off and tick back up into a more of a price-driven, market-driven type of a dynamic as opposed to what's taking place here with all this rhetoric. But, you know, look, I know in the short term this doesn't make you feel any better. But by the time we get to, you know, harvest and the demand continues as it will, the fundamentals are still intact with regard to China. I think that you'll see the price rebound, and I think farmers are going to be okay. The other thing I think we need to understand, too, in the United States, we've been victims of Chinese misbehavior economically for years. They tariff us at a much, much higher rate on virtually everything we send into the country as it is now. And so, you know, what we're trying to do is, and I think most Americans would agree that, you know, we need to be looking out for Americans. And what people don't realize is that any investment that's made in China by U.S. interests, it's always done at a disadvantage. For example, joint ventures require that Chinese ownership of at least 51%. And they also require that any and all intellectual property is shared with the Chinese. So therefore, they're essentially stealing our intellectual property and then selling it back to us at a profit. And so at what point do we start to recognize that, you know, the Chinese have been breaking the rules for years, and heck, now they're setting the rules, and it's time for that to change.
One thing I was wanting to ask you, this is Representative Rick Crawford joining us here on KASU. With Mississippi County producing a lot of steel in the United States, are you concerned about what this could mean for Big River Steel and Osceola and Nucor and Blavel?
Well, certainly. I mean, this was an issue that they have been have talked to me about numerous times. There have been a great deal of economic analysis on this. Understanding that, you know, look, prior to this, we were at about 74% capacity in U.S. steel mills. There had been some shuttering of U.S. mills, and we were not doing what we needed to be doing from a, you know, quite frankly, the steel industry represents a national security imperative, just as the ag industry does. A country that can't feed and clothe itself is vulnerable, but a country that can't build on its own terms, and steel being integral to infrastructure, is also vulnerable from a national security standpoint. I'm not talking about the defense industry. I'm talking about our own ability to meet the demands domestically that we have on our terms and not be reliant on other countries. And the steel industry recognized this, and the Chinese were, you know, avoiding countervailing duties and continuing to dump through transshipping partners. For example, they would bring steel over here, ship it through Malaysia or the Philippines or Vietnam, put their label on it, and then it enters the U.S. market. And so I think the other issue is, quite frankly, it's not as good a quality as what we have in the United States. And so do we really want to trust not only this, okay, it's cheap, and we're, you know, save a little money on the front end, but in the long term, this is not a good quality product that we're putting into these public infrastructure projects, and I don't think that's a good value to the taxpayer. So not only is it bad for American workers, it's bad for safety. And so I think there's a lot more to consider here than just simply, you know, the dumping that takes place here from the Chinese, who are producing overcapacity and subsidizing it at a much, much higher rate than any other nation.
What's the path forward? How do you think this could be resolved?
Well, you know, I think we've got a commitment from the White House and his team. U.S. Trade Representative Lighthizer has, I think, taking some pretty bold position on this. I think that the economic team with the White House has also said, you know, they've done their due diligence on this. They assess that this would have very little impact on the cost of goods, that right now we're just in this rhetorical phase and nothing is final. But at some point in time, and I think the rest of the world is going to have to come to terms with this as well, the Chinese, they are belligerent actors economically, politically, militarily, and otherwise. And we see this around the world. And you know, the United States is no different. I had the ambassador from Brazil in my office a couple of weeks ago, and they have a similar issue there where they've got dumping that takes place in Brazil, and they've assessed countervailing duties, and they're dealing with the transshipment issue as well. So at some point in time, you know, these industrialized nations and developing nations that are making investment in infrastructure are going to have to come to terms with the fact that the Chinese are aggressively dumping a substandard product into the marketplace, driving down prices. And to what end, I don't know, but because they manipulate their currency as well, you know, it's something that makes it difficult, you know, for us to just stop. And you know, their accession into the WTO I thought was problematic on the front end. It continues to be, and there's very little done. But what we can't abide as Americans is to allow China to supersede us as the economic power in the world. And they're positioning themselves to do that, and they're doing it in a very aggressive and belligerent way.
U.S. Representative Rick Crawford, we're out of time, unfortunately, but thank you, as always, for joining us. We really appreciate you. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.